Today we're speaking with Kevin Meehan. Kevin has a thriving acupuncture and naturopathic health practice in Jackson Hole. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, how are you, Nancy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So, Kevin, tell me how you got interested in natural medicine and what is your definition of natural medicine?
Well, to begin with, to answer the first question, I was diagnosed with diabetes at the age of 17, young, and knowing very little, if anything, about healthcare or medicine, that promoted me or instigated me to look forward to eradicating diabetes in other ways rather than just giving insulin shots and so on and so forth. So that was the keystone for me to begin the journey, so to speak, in healthcare, as not just helping myself, but helping others. And I personally think that when we begin from ourselves, we can help other people more effectively in that sense, because that's how we grow and that's how we look for more information on how to do it in what I consider a correct manner.
So you're learning on yourself, and then then you've proven truths to yourself, then you know they're true, and then you can move on.
And then what you can do is you can translate that into people, into patients, because you've gone through it and you've experienced discomfort or disease yourself. Mm-hmm. And therefore it gives you more of a connection, so to speak, with the patients that you try to help.
Tell us a little bit about growing up and where you studied.
Well, I was abandoned when I was 11 years old, and I lived on the streets, basically, which was a benefit. It wasn't any disfavorment or anything like that. I look at the benefits that came from something like that because it taught me to reach deep inside myself and be independent enough to understand that I had resources and capacities that could not only help myself but other people as well. And from 11 to probably 14 years old, I went through the whole drug era, so to speak, of trying drugs and so on and so forth, recreational drugs, that is, and had my first job at 14 years old, which was against California state law at that time, but I was able to manage it. And basically, through that mode, I was really lucky to go through that. And it's an experience that I feel very fortunate to have gone through, where a lot of people haven't been able to experience that. And in a way, that's brought a favorment for me in what I do today.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about your first job.
First job was dishwashing.
All right.
I was proud.
We need to start right there.
And then I was hired as a caretaker maintenance person for a health institute called Human Dimensions Institute West in Ojai, California.
Oh.
And that's where I began to understand or look at alternative, quote unquote, ways of practicing healthcare and dimensional thinking as far as lifestyles and so on and so forth. So that was really, and diabetes in culmination with that led to what I do today. That was more or less the beginning, the gestation of what I do today.
So from there, you have a degree in Oriental medicine. Can you just tell us about that process?
Sure. I have a degree as an acupuncturist. I have a degree in Oriental medicine, and I have a master's degree in science. So I don't practice Chinese medicine per se, even though I understand its principles, because it does come into play in certain mechanisms. Everything comes full circle. What we look for here in the West, known as allopathic medicine, generally is understood in Eastern medicine. It's just defined as different ways of approaching the same condition. So unfortunately, in the West, we're dualistic in our thought processes, which means we like to separate good, bad, so on and so forth. Asian philosophy has an idea that each is necessary for one to work in order to complement the other. As an example, there's really no such thing as bad or good. It's just an indication on how to correct things for equilibrium. It's similar to what we see in physics. Antimatter and matter require each other because when they both meet, they stabilize each other and create balance. Yep. So bringing that into a Western format, because I do practice Western type of science as a biochemist, I practice these principles, but bringing in Asian philosophies or techniques helps to understand that more effectively, because in physics, it's important to understand the roles. Have you heard of yin and yang before? I'm sure you have.
Certainly.
Those are the principles of negative and positive, and we refer to them as dualistic aspects in the West, but it comes into an important play factor when it comes to medicine, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say you're a biochemist. I mean, I conjure up a mad scientist in his laboratory concocting all sorts of things in his test tubes and beakers. So what does biochemist mean?
I think that first part defines me probably pretty well. Basically, what it means is that we can take chemistry. Chemistry, just as you know, atoms and so on and so forth, and atoms work with each other to can develop some wonderful things. We see that mm-hmm. in medicine today, in pharmaceuticals and so on and mm-hmm. so forth. It's understanding what the laws of each formulation, if we come up with a compound, so to speak, with mm-hmm. its combination of elements, so on and so forth, is beneficial or detrimental to the body, or is it favorable? Because some people, as an example, can use iron as a favorable, an element that has enzyme qualities, but it can be disfavorable as well. It's one of the most toxic things you can take, iron. It's just understanding the ways in which to use it. So biochemistry comes into that role of understanding what is the correct ways of using one compound over another compound for health in this particular case.
Tell us about your experience then. You developed or designed alternative treatments for hepatitis C and for cancer patients. Is that something you can touch on?
That is correct. Hepatitis C is a virus. It's a latent virus. There's several different types of hepatitis. We've probably heard about, you know, a lot of people have heard about A and B and so on and so forth. Okay. Hepatitis C is known as the more detrimental type because it can be considered lifelong. Mm-hmm. And understanding the nature of the virus, we can address the nature. If we understand how the virus reacts, we can address it, and address it meaning we can, I don't want to say conquer it, we can keep it into check so it doesn't hurt the liver. The reason hepatitis is so dangerous is because it damages the liver in mammals mm-hmm. and in humans in this case. And if we can conquer or decrease the propagation, so to speak, okay. of the virus, we're able to handle it. And I did design a protocol that is relatively effective, or it's probably 90% effective or 95% effective for hepatitis C, of getting the liver to basically show normal function, ALT and AST, the enzyme, so on and so mm-hmm. forth. So that's the hepatitis treatment. And it's really exciting because we're helping so many people with this disease when they're only given interferon treatments. And they, you know, some people are saying, well, I don't want to go through that treatment, rightfully so, because it has a lot of negative side effects.
Right. So is this nutrient based or?
Basically, you take it, you don't have to really watch diet, obviously, with the exception of consumption of ethanol, which is alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it's basically supplemental based. I mean, there's a protocol that we have a triad, so to speak, of three supplemental protocols that take, and those AST and ALT levels will drop substantially. And it really helps a lot of people.
I
really feel fortunate to be able to help people with this particular situation.
Well, how do you educate your patients about natural medicine or alternative treatments? How do you educate them when we're so totally bombarded with Western medicines treat the symptom, not the cause,
sure.
you know?
It all starts from, I consider it, from the basement. And the basement being that naturopathic medicine or alternative medicine, as long as it comes from a scientific point of view, and I'm very scientific, mm-hmm. so I have to understand that there are alternative practitioners that aren't science-based, and that's appreciated as long as it works and as long as it's safe. But when I educate my patient, I start from the basement profile that this is science-based. And a lot of people still don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
People say, well, you know what? It's not science when you take B1, but it is science when you take B1. If people understand exactly what B1 is, thiamine, mm-hmm. then you understand we can break it scientifically down. And that's how I approach it with my patients, saying, this is what's happening. It's not something that you're taking that is just, that's harmless.
Mm-hmm.
Because any vitamin can be detrimental if taken in certain amounts, just like a pharmaceutical drug.
Right.
And what we want to do, or what I want to do in this particular case, is educate them to say, listen, the pharmaceutical drugs you're taking now might not be the most favorable for you. And there are pharmaceutical drugs that are very important for us,
right.
antibiotics, so on and so forth.
Right.
But what's important, that unfortunately naturopaths are missing and allopathics are missing is to know their limitations. They don't understand limits.
I see.
And a lot of doctors, quote unquote, are prescribing and not knowing their limits, and they should. And that's the unfortunate thing, is they're damaging patients because they don't have enough background in chemistry to understand what the prescription that they're giving their patients. Over 200,000 people have died, fatalities in the U.S. from correctly prescribed medications.
Correctly prescribed.
That is correct. And the reason why, just like the Michael Jackson situation, and I'm not, we can't blame the doctors because they're not based in chemistry.
Right, and they're probably not on top of, new drugs all the time are being developed, and how can you possibly, as a doctor, see patients and keep on top of
exactly.
all that?
Exactly. So we have to give leeway, and a lot of people will come to me just angry about doctors, saying, mm-hmm. I will never see them again, and so on and so forth. And it's true, a lot of practitioners, doctors, so to speak, aren't probably being as attentive as they should and responsible as they should. Not all, obviously, but just like naturopaths, just like acupuncturists, mm-hmm. they should be more attentive. Mm-hmm. This goes straight across the board.
Right.
And what we have to understand is an equal playing field. And I feel a little uneasy when naturopaths judge doctors for saying that they're no good. And I get a little uneasy when doctors say, well, naturopaths aren't going to be able to do anything, or alternative practitioners. There needs to be an understanding, a clear understanding of how both practitioners can bring balance or capacities of healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think we'd get along better as a community if that was understood.
I think I would agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kevin, at one point in your life, you opened a clinic in Kathmandu, Nepal. What made you decide to go there, and do you speak Nepalese?
I do not speak Nepalese, number one, because they speak English. I'm very lazy when it comes to that, but I do speak Thai,
being in Thailand. Okay.
But after my residency, everyone has to do a certain amount of residence, internship hours and so on and so forth. So I had the opportunity of going to Nepal. And it wasn't really a clinic, so to speak. We rented a house and we invited the expat community, which were Americans, Europeans, and Nepalese. And Nepalese were seeing us and Tibetans and so on and so forth. That's where I first got to meet David Schlem, by the way, in Nepal. Wonderful man. And I started there to accumulate more of my residence hours or my internship hours for my license. And I stayed there for about a year, I think it was. And it was exciting. I studied in homeopathy a lot, did a lot of oriental medicine, and obviously continued my pursuits in biochemistry. And basically it was a great experience. And then on to Thailand.
Then on to Thailand.
Exactly. And then to come home and start paying for my student loans.
Well, you still take trips to Thailand on a pretty regular basis, don't you?
I do, about once a year.
And you take friends, patients?
Who've never been to the country.
Uh-huh.
And I do because I just enjoy it so much, and I think they do as well. Seeing the tropics, the diving.
Yeah, scuba diving.
And the tropical fish and everything, it's great. It's great to get there. And unfortunately, I've been too busy lately. I think it's been 2 years since I've been back, but I'm going to have to make that. I might be able to make it early this next year. So.
Well, tell us then how your journey to Jackson Hole. How did you get to Jackson Hole?
I met a young woman.
That seems to be a common theme when I ask this question.
Yeah. And she used to live in Wilson. And she asked if she wanted to return to this area. Previous to coming out here, I checked to see what the environment was for naturopaths or acupuncturists and so on and so forth. And I was the second acupuncturist here in Jackson. Carol Mercero, I believe, was the first. And it seemed inviting to me. So that's what initially brought me here. And it's been great. It's been 20 years since then. And I feel very fortunate to at least, I hope I've provided some help for this community. And that's what makes it rewarding for me.
Well, you most certainly have. But you do so many other things too. You're a published writer and illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about...
I write for the Jackson Hole News.
Mm-hmm.
The article, I think it's in the living section. I'm not really sure, but it's about health.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain, as a matter of fact, I had an article this last week about cardiovascular disease. I am working on a book now, a cookbook. And the cookbook has four sections in it, and it's how to cook for a pathology.
Oh.
So the recipes teach you how to cook delicious food for a particular condition, such as if you have hypertension, how you can make specific dishes for hypertension to treat that very condition and to take supplementals as well. So it gives a brief explanation on the pathology. It gives a recipe guideline,
uh-huh.
and it tells you how to use those recipes for a particular condition. So as an example, if you have migraine headaches, why you can use something that has an antiplatelet aggregation, which some fruits do, and you can make a fruit pie that actually is beneficial for migraine headaches.
Well, I'll look forward to that.
It's a big project. So
tell us about Mulligan Stew.
Mulligan Stew, I had a dog, which I think you met at one time.
I know
Mulligan.
Yes, I knew Mulligan.
A black lab. And in studying and investigating something called telomeres, telomeres are end caps on chromosomes that determine aging. Understanding that there's a way of slowing down the way a telomere fragments or breaks down. And that is the appears right now to be the genetic time clock, which determines how we age.
I see.
Well, obviously with Mulligan, I'm sitting there, how can I get this guy to live a longer life frame? So I began to feed him the supplement that I designed for impeding or stopping telomere fragmentation or telomere fragmentation. And by doing so, I realized that the gray hair was starting to disappear on his chin and he was acting more vibrant. So at that particular time, I thought, well, how can I get this to animals around the world or the country? This same formulation that is working.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is I thought, well, why don't we feed the dog at the same time? So let's wrap the formulation in a food. The food idea was second. I didn't care really about the food. So Mulligan Stew came into design due to the fact that we were able to say, well, let's feed the dog, but most importantly, let's get him the formulation. And that's how Mulligan Stew started.
It's sold in stores all around Teton County. Where else is it?
It is. It's in Canada. I believe we're in 30 states, 35 states now or something, and China's showing interest. Believe it or not, China is showing interest in it. But it's because I think the avenue right now, as we talked about healthcare, people are looking for something rather than just healthy food. They want to see a purpose to the food, not just giving healthy food, but what else can it do? As an example, I patented a skin process that grows new skin by 38%.
Wow.
When it's applied topically. And this process, it has its fourth patent that's attached where it can be administered into joints and grows 44% new cartilage. So it can save someone from possible replacements, surgeries, and so on and so forth. And it's the same process that... And I bring that into play here because we're looking now at a horizon in healthcare where people are no longer interested in just substantial arrested conditions of saying, well, I'm okay the way. They want to see something more. They want to see, what can this do more than just applying this solution to my face or giving this to my dog? Can we see something more? The benefit with Mulligan Stew is it's a detoxification too. It detoxifies the mammal. We've had animals into propyl glycol, which is antifreeze, and they eat Mulligan Stew, and within 24 hours, they're okay.
Wow, that's quite an amazing story.
It's the detoxification. We've had several cases like that. Now, I don't suggest that if someone gets into
it. Try it.
Exactly, yeah. But it's something to be aware of that we've seen, and it's very popular with the fallout that we've received from Japan, the radioactive fallout, is because the same process that's in Mulligan Stew has been shown to, it's called DNA annealing. And what it does is it can get DNA to heal, so to speak, back into its original format instead of going into mutation.
That's incredible.
So it's exciting.
That is very exciting.
Yeah.
You were telling me earlier about a new product that you have around Jackson. You designed it for athletes. And it's a snack bar of some sort?
Right. And Nancy, what that is ATP, and ATP stands for adenosine triphosphate. Every mammal has it. Every cell has it. And it's the powerhouse. If you remember the mitochondria and the powerhouse, ATP is just that. It is the energy package, so to speak, that we produce in our cells. And what I designed basically is the process that generates that, that gets that going. And we found out that most people are inefficient in being able to propagate ATP. And we see this in many conditions such as fibromyalgia, mm-hmm. where the lactic acid stores in the muscles because it's being inhibited from entering the Krebs cycle that generates ATP.
I see.
This okay. process, when you take it, essentially encourages the propagation of ATP, the molecule, or ATP is the format, the energy format within the cell. Now we're finding out that people are taking it are losing weight, cellulite, because ATP requires, in order to generate ATP, you have to get energy from somewhere. Fat is one of those energy sources.
Oh.
And so we see in this environment, we see it's not a secret to anyone that in America, 46% of people now are overweight. And that in part could be due to the lack of the Krebs cycle activity. All we do is crank the Krebs cycle up. It's not through epinephrine or caffeine or stimulants. And what that does is it utilizes ketones. It utilizes lactic acid and fat for fuel.
What could you please explain the Krebs cycle? I know it's the course of energy through the body, but could sure. you briefly
sure.
just briefly talk about it without
sure in a very simplistic analogy. Yeah. Think of a squirrel cage with seven squirrels that run it. Those squirrels require food in order to run that squirrel cage. Imagine the squirrel cage being hooked to a generator that produces energy.
Okay.
Now, the food is there. It's like, think of the marketplace. You go to the store, vegetables and products and produce are there. But there needs to be a delivery source in order to get the product from the farm to the store. In this case, there needs to be a delivery source from the store fuel, which would be fat or ketones or lactic acid, to the squirrels.
Okay.
All this does, this ATP process I designed, delivers the fuel to the squirrels. So they basically can run the squirrel cage.
I see.
In most people, a lot of people today, according to Dr. Tennant, which I encourage people, if they're compelled to, is to read about him. He's a world well-known physician who talks about deficiencies in ATP, is most people have lacked the ability to feed the squirrels. So we see pathologies as a result. We see diabetes. Mm-hmm. We see obesity. Even though eating does obviously contribute to obesity and right. is one of the major factors, but the other link can be the lack of the Krebs cycle activity. Mm-hmm. All this process does is gets those squirrels to run. The squirrels represent the enzymes in the Krebs cycle. So it's literally giving them the food.
I see.
It's that easy.
Yeah. Well, who has been most influential in your life in terms of your studies and helping you become who you are, helping you to set your goals? And
the gentleman that hired me, as I mentioned before, Human Dimensions Institute West, probably him. His name's Luke Gatto, and he himself is a biologist. I give him the credit because he's the one who started me on this pathway of understanding dimensional thought processes. And I like to refer to it as this, that most people think linear. If we take a piece, very simply, if we take a piece of paper and at one corner we proclaim it as point A, and in the middle of the piece of paper we have point B, and the end of the other corner we have point C, most people think the quickest way from point A to point C is a straight line that intersects point B.
Right.
The quickest way is to fold the paper and bring them together. That's dimensional thought process. So if we think in terms of the present being B, the past being A, and the future being C, no longer we can say, I have thought, I will think, I am thinking. Instead, let's bring those together and say it's all one.
That's wonderful.
That's the process. And that's what makes my work easy. A lot of people, a lot of pharmaceuticals, a lot of companies have asked me how I've designed the process of skin, you know, generating skin or cartilage. And it's just basically I take those points and I fold them and I bring them all together. It's dimensional thought process. So I really owe the premise of that in a way to Luke, who's a good friend of mine, who hired me when I was the age of 15, 16 years old.
Well, you have had a very fascinating life, Kevin.
I know. But thank you. I'm very fortunate, actually.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in to talk with us today.
Sure. It's my pleasure.